All right, let's start this mofo because I've still got to pack tonight. I hate going out of town and getting ready.
Is that what we're calling it these days?
All right.
Hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Chaney.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. This is episode 30. That doesn't really mean anything other than it's a nice round number divisible by 10, which I like those kind of numbers. So welcome. Hope you're having a great week so far. You are listening to this right after Memorial Day. So just wanted to thank everybody that has served. And, you know, it's not just a holiday about barbecuing and spending time with family, but about those that have sacrificed for this country. So just want to let all of those people know that we think about them and appreciate their sacrifice. And, thank you. We have got a lot of tech stuff to talk about today. No guest today, and a lot of odd topics. So we're going to bounce around a whole lot. I've got my co-host with me, Jeff. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am great because I am actually, as we record this, preparing to go out of town. I am going to the wonderful city of St. Louis over the long weekend. I will have already been and back by the time this podcast is going out there. So we are just going to pretend that I had a fabulous time and ate some amazing barbecue and all of that good stuff and saw arches aplenty and zoos and city museums and all of that good fun stuff. I'm a little trepidatious because we are taking our 5-year-old and her 4-year-old nephew. So we are going to be dragging two young ones through all of these fun family filled adventures.
They'll have a really good time. There's a lot of fun stuff that's very either free or cheap to do in St. Louis that they will really enjoy. I think you're going to have a great time.
Oh, I have no doubt they're going to have a great time. I'm just worried about running two young kids into the ground and then having meltdowns because they're tired because they've been running all day. I'm worried that going to have a good time. And let's face it, at the end of the day, isn't it really all about me?
I'm actually having a very good evening because thanks to our previous guests from the Hopperatives, I am enjoying a tasty frosty beverage.
And ooh, what do you got?
I got some Blue Moon Summer Honey Wheat, and it is quite delicious. I'm enjoying it very much, and we may have to pause for me to go get another one.
I'm a little jealous because I just have a cup of ice water, and that doesn't sound nearly as refreshing and crisp.
You know, I haven't had beer in so long, and then they got me on the I think I need to have beer, and so now I'm having beer. thanks a lot.
Tom and Carlick totally got me hooked on the Angry Orchard. I love that stuff, and I went out and picked up a 6-pack of the the Curious Traveler, the Shandy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not a huge fan. I don't know if it's the citrus or the ale or what, but I was hoping I was going to just be blown away by it, and I'm just kind of like meh. But two thumbs up the Angry Orchard. That stuff is good.
Well, find what you like and drink it. And I'm enjoying this. It's quite tasty.
I'm going to go get a Budweiser after this.
Why would you do that to yourself? Do you hate yourself? Is that what you're saying?
I do. It's just like a little internal self-flagellation. I gotta punish myself somehow. I don't know. I've probably done something bad. Hey, everybody, if you have a question, a comment, a rant, anything that you want to verbalize a noise and make us hear it, please give us a call at our call-in line. That number is 317-643-1212. We will listen. We will put it on the air. If you want us to put you on the air and make you internet famous, if you don't, we won't. But we've always got that out there. You don't even have to talk to us. It goes straight to voicemail. So just reminding you that that is out there. We do have some reader email we're going to get to on this show. But first, I found something, and this blew me away. Somehow, Jeff and I got on the subject the other day of where crazy stuff comes from that goes into our medicine. And I think it came from the fact that Jeff was talking about a medication he takes was originally synthesized from lizard spit. And
that is correct.
And you go,
Gila monsters.
Yeah. And you go, okay, how does someone make the leap from lizard spit to, hey, this medicine can help solve a medical malady? And I'm sure that there is probably a very legitimate scientific chain of logic there that makes sense. But I'll be dipped if I could think of what that might be.
I think it's very evident that neither one of us have ever been much into the biology sciences. So while we might be able to speak somewhat intelligently about physics and or chemistry to a certain extent.
A very little certain extent.
When it comes to biology, though, I think we're pretty much round in the total moron camp. So
absolutely.
I'm sure there are some very good reasons on why someone said, you know what I think would be good here? Gila monster spit, but I don't know what that would be. But okay, so I told you, yes, when we started talking about that, I'm like, hey, guess what? Gila monster spit isn't the weirdest thing that I've heard of. And I told you something, and you didn't believe me.
That is true.
And then you researched it, right? And what did you find?
That is true. So Jeff, of course, being the fountain of quasi-useful trivia that he is, said...
It's nothing useful about this, knowing this, but it's
useful
trivia
for somebody to know it exists. So Jeff says, well, that's not the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. I think that there is a medicine out there made from female urine. And I said, oh, pshaw. And
I said, wait a minute. I said, not only
just
was it
female urine.
No.
But divine.
Menopausal
female
nuns.
That's right. Divine female urine.
That's correct.
I looked, and by golly, there is a drug out there. There's actually two forms of this drug. One is called Pergonol, which, okay, that already sounds like purgatory. So you've already kind of got the religious tie-in. And the other one is called Minipure. And what it is it is drug that is synthesized from women who have gone through menopause. And the article I found has a quote, and this blew me away. So it says, quote, Dr. Bruno Lundfeld was a medical student in the early 1960s. At the time, he recognized that during menopause, women's urine was likely to contain high levels of the hormone that stimulate ovulation. Why? Because as the ovaries decline, the pituitary gland raises these hormone levels in an intensifying attempt to release the remaining eggs. That makes perfect sense, right? You got to flush all them eggs out of there. Got to get them out of there like, leftovers in the fridge. So it goes on to say...
Going out of business sale.
Yeah, going out of business.
Everything must go.
So it goes on to say, quote, of course, finding a regular source for such urine presented a problem. At a conference in Italy, however, Lundfeld met the nephew of Pope Pius. He had a great source, nuns, saying, quote, where better to get a large amount of FSH, an ovulating stimulating hormone, than from women at menopause, says Dr. Nanette Sanatoro, chair of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Colorado, Denver. Quote, convents were a perfect place. So, yes, they did get it from nun piss. So if you're
there you go. If you have fertility issues, you can thank Sister Margaret Claire in Italy.
And that blew me away. And I'm hoping that, you know, that was the 1960s. I'm hoping now by 2015 we have a synthesized version, because
I'm sure we do.
I mean, don't want to think that I'm injecting urine into myself. Well, I wouldn't be injecting urine into myself, but
but in the 1960s, you know, we weren't quite as far along and finding formularies that exist in nature.
It just blew my mind that that is a thing, and I guess is still a drug that is used today for fertility, Minipure and Pergonol. So that is your weird fact, so that you know
weird trivia facts that you can, you know, win a bar bet on. There is medicine made from Gila monster saliva and nun urine. There you go.
And the last thing I'm going to say,
never make those streams cross, though.
As Jeff and I were talking, we have our show notes, and I put in the show notes that the title of this topic was Nun's Urine as Medicine, and he guffawed at that. So there you go. Okay, we've got some reader emails, listener emails. We don't have readers. I hope. I mean, good Lord. Hopefully people aren't reading this. You want to tackle the first one? Wait, no, not the first one, Jeff. The second one, because you did some research on that.
I can read the first one, and it doesn't matter.
Go ahead.
So Howard B. wrote in and said, recently found this gem of a podcast. Was a Betamouse fan from the get-go. Listening to the description of the Lines app got me to drop my flip phone for an iPhone 3GS in the fall of 2010. Oorah. That oorah was my insert there. iPhone 5 in 2014, 13-inch MacBook Pro later, here I am. I think it was Jeff in an early episode of the show that was thinking he might replace his old MacBook. Did you do so? What did you get? What would you get? Also, do you think Apple will retain a 4-inch phone in the lineup after the 5S goes away? So, did I do so? Yes, I did. I am currently using, as we record this, a 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina and the Force Touch with the new chipset. I really think it is a wonderful machine. I do not regret my purchase at all. They did just announce the 15-inch MacBook updates, but they do not have the new Intel processors because Intel has not been making any 4-core Broadwell chips. And so ultimately, I'm happy with the fact that I only have 2 cores, but that it's Broadwell architecture. Therefore, I have better battery life. My 13-inch MacBook Pro is wonderful. The Force Touch mouse pad is just amazing. I love it. I think I'm going to love it more and more as we see more applications put forth that take advantage of it. But it is amazing piece of hardware. And more on the 13-inch MacBook Pro later in the episode.
So that you mentioned the, you know, as more apps become available to take advantage of that Force Track touchpad, whatever it's called, which is amazing. I mean, it is magical. Has really anything, I mean, that platform's now been out for a couple of months. Has anything really been released that takes advantage of the Force Touch?
As far as I know, no. So far, it's just been Apple products. And I even switched. I had been using Google Chrome almost extensively. I actually switched to Safari.
I don't even know who you are.
Because there's some pretty cool Force Touch features there. Like when there's a link on a web page, if you Force Touch, it pops up a new window over that web page with that link.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I know. And so it's like, that's only available if I use Safari. So for now, I'm back to Safari because of that feature. You know, it you can use it in QuickTime Player and any of the Apple movie playing. The harder you push, like when you're fast forwarding, the faster it fast forwards.
Mm-hmm.
That's like 7 different levels of force that it recognizes. So it's pretty amazing. Also in Finder, to preview a file, you force click on it and it pulls up the preview.
Yeah, that's really nice.
So, I mean, you know, I think, you know, Chrome will, you know, probably at some point have that type of feature of opening up a new tab. And I'm sure you're going to see other applications take advantage of that API, but it's still pretty new. And, you know, so far as I know, there aren't any. I'm definitely keeping my eyes open for that. And I will bring those up on the podcast if I notice any. And if anyone knows of any that I don't know of or haven't talked about, hey, let us know. Because, you know, obviously I'm interested in hearing about that. The other question he was talking about is, do I think that Apple will retain a 4-inch phone after the 5S goes away? And I think the answer to that question is, at least for me, when you say the 5S goes away, I think the 5S will go away. I think the 5C is going to stick around until they make some other kind of determination on another 4-inch phone. I don't think it'll be the 5S. I think it'll be the 5C that they keep around.
Is the 5, I haven't seen very many people who use the 5C. Is it still being sold?
It is still being sold. I see a lot of high school students that have that.
Yeah, it's a little less than the 5S, right?
It's yeah,
not much. Well, it's like $100.
Yeah, it's $100.
Oh, less, you can actually get it for free on a 2-year contract now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I mean, that's like I said, I see that a lot at high schools.
Yeah.
And you know, it makes a lot of sense, I guess. Probably a little more rugged. You know, I think there's probably a bigger margin for Apple on those, even though they're that much cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I think ultimately, I don't think we'll see a new 4-inch phone with this coming September's upgrade cycle. But I do think that when we get an iPhone 7...
Yeah, the 5 platform will be pretty long in the tooth at that point.
I think at that point, you'll see maybe a 7C that comes out at that time that is a 4-inch phone or a 4.2-inch phone or, you know, something along those lines. You know, I know there are people out there that still want 4-inch phones, but I think what Apple has found is that most people, honestly, if they give it a try, are very happy to get that little bit of extra real estate on the iPhone 6. I'm an iPhone 6 Plus user, so even more so for me. But my parents are actually looking at phones right now, and they're going to get an iPhone 6, and they're like, oh, it seems so big. And I'm like, you know, have you guys thought about a 6 Plus? And they're like, oh, I couldn't even fit that in my pocket. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see if you can fit that in your pocket, which, of course, they could. And they're like, well, it just seems so huge. And I'm like, okay, but think about it, guys. You know, you tell me all the time, you know, my parents are getting older. They're in their 70s. They're like, I can't even see this thing. Well, guess what? It's easier to see the 6 Plus than it is a 6 or a 5, or my dad's still carrying an iPhone 4. So, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I have to disagree. I think that you're I don't know if it's going to be with the S cycle that we're going to see this year. But I think by next year with the 7 release cycle, I don't think Apple is going to keep that form factor around. And I agree, there are people who like that size, who want that size. But when you go out and you look at people who have phones, the people that I still see who have the 4s and the 4s's are kids who have gotten it because it was 99 cents or free on contract. People whose companies have given them a phone, and that was what they settled on. But I don't really see very many people with it. And I don't even really see that many people with the 5 or the 5S anymore. And the people that I do know that have them, myself included, we're just waiting at this point now for the 6S cycle to come out to do an upgrade. And most people I see are carrying larger phones, whether, you know, other Android phones, or they've upgraded to the 6 or the 6 Plus. I see a lot of 6s out there. And having used a 4.7-inch phone in the Android world, that is just, man, that is a sweet spot of size versus not too big. It does fit pretty comfortably most places, and you can use it maybe not as completely as one-handed as a smaller screen, but certainly doable. I think Apple drops it. I think we might have it through this cycle, but I think by next cycle it's going to be. I hope they keep the 4.7 and they don't go the Samsung route where everything starts pushing towards 5 inches and, you know, 5.5 or 6 on the bigger side. But I don't think that the world is long for a 4-inch phone anymore. I just think that's going away.
You're probably right. There are staunch Apple people out there, they're like, well, if they get rid of a 4-inch phone, I'm done. I'm never going to buy another. And do you believe that? I don't, because it's not like there are any 4-inch Android phones that are worth a crap out there either. So
what do you have, like the Moto G, I think, or the inexpensive Moto is in that size?
It's like 4.3 inches, right? I think. So, I mean, I don't know that I believe those people, but the reality is, yeah, I mean, I think Samsung has proven out that people want at least 4.75 inches in a phone. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's not like Samsung shies away from making 20 different phones. And the reality is that the demand just isn't there for those smaller phones.
Well, and if Apple does eliminate that and those diehard people say, I'm done, what do they switch to? I mean, there's really only a handful of phones that are considered flagship that are in that size. I mean, you've got the Moto G, and there's another, I think, inexpensive Moto that's, you know, in that size ballpark. But other than that, you've got the really, really inexpensive, you know, practically free phones that you see at the kiosks, and they're, you know, they're 2-megapixel cameras and, you know, 3G at best, and they're not, you know, serious phones. So
maybe this is an inroad for Microsoft to create a 4-inch Windows phone device that will take over the world. World.
I still feel like it's a minority of people who want that size at this point. So I don't know. We'll be interesting to see. I Jeff says yes, I say no, but I think only time will tell. And
well, I think we have a 100% chance that the podcast in general will be correct.
I like how we cover our bases on that. The podcast is always correct as long as we take completely contrary positions.
You want to read the next question?
I do. TJ, listener TJ writes, love the podcast. I was just setting up my new work phone, a Kyocera Brigadier, because it bangs on stuff while I'm working. And I was reminded that I always wondered why it is that GPS functions, what the GPS function is doing with Wi-Fi that makes it more accurate. Have never heard a well-researched and thought-provoking insight as to why they want to use Wi-Fi. Since you guys are the smartest guys I know of, I thought you might know. Also thought that this might be something that others may have some interest in. Once again, I really enjoy listening, and thanks for your hard work on the podcast. Oh, go on. Keep praising us.
Like, read that part about the smartest guys I know. So I think what TJ's trying to say is, I know no one.
Yeah, he doesn't know very many people.
I know
at all.
Two people. Their names are Jacob and Jeff, and they're the smartest guys I know.
Yeah,
that's okay.
I don't mind the praise, but I actually didn't really know the answer to this myself, okay. And Jeff looked it up, and edumacate us, Jeff.
Okay, and I kind of had an idea, but I wanted to, you know, confirm that I was not just spouting off something. So what the basic thing is that if you remember a few years ago when Google got in all kinds of trouble for driving their mapping cars all around, and while they were doing that, taking and logging into people's Wi-Fis and recording data. Well, guess what? One of the things that they were doing in that time was recording every Wi-Fi hotspot, the MAC address associated with that hotspot, and where it is. And they have collected all that data and make it available for people to use so that based on triangulation of what Wi-Fi hotspots your phone can see, even if you're not connected to them, your phone is seeing those hotspots. If you go to the little Wi-Fi menu and you see, do you want to join these, you know, depending on where you are, it could be up to 20, 30, you know, Wi-Fi networks. So based on the Wi-Fi networks that your phone can see and the dB strength of that signal, they basically know how far away you are from each of those Wi-Fi hotspots. And if you have at least three, they can pretty much triangulate where you are to within 5 feet. Now, the reason this is important isn't because that's more accurate than GPS. GPS is within 2 or 3 feet. If you're outside, it's a nice day out, and you have good satellite viewpoint of the GPS satellites. If you're in a building, if you're in especially like a mall, for instance, that isn't really very useful. And one of the reasons that they want to use GPS functioning is so that if you are indoors someplace, say at a mall, and you're like, I wonder where the Microsoft store is or the Apple store is or TJ Maxx is or whatever, it can lead you to where you need to go based on the signal strength of those Wi-Fi. And even if you are outside, it's still going to use that data along with the GPS data to be as accurate as it possibly can. And that's the answer.
Yeah. And now, and after Jeff had told me that, this actually goes into something that I'm going to talk about what I love. There are apps out there that use that information to help track your movement and activity and all of those fun things. And they work without taxing GPS, which is very battery intensive. And they check in for location assistance, and it will triangulate based on which cell towers your phone can see and which Wi-Fi hotspots your phone can see. And that's how it gets more accurate to know, oh, you were traveling in these areas. And it may not be, you know, pinpoint accurate like GPS is, but it also lets you get through a day with an app like that running, and it doesn't suck your battery dry like it would if you were, you know, running a navigation app that was actively using GPS. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Jeff learned me something, and I thank TJ for writing in and asking that. That's very cool. Thank you, TJ.
Yeah, good question.
I came across a story which just boggled my mind. a California woman was recently fired after she disabled an app that her company made her install on her phone that was tracking her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Oh, you did it. I knew you were going to do it. I knew you didn't have it in the show notes. And I thought, okay, he's going to be good. But instead you went there. No, no, she didn't do it 24/7, 365, Jacob.
Okay.
It never does that.
She did it 24/52/365. I don't know. All the time. All the dang time.
How about 24/365?
24/365. Which,
or 24/7/52.
Oh, there you go. 24/7/52. Well. Yeah. I feel like we're getting into the lost numbers at this point, like 8, 16, 23. So anyway, so she worked for and I don't even know what a money transfer firm is. That is what the article described it as, a money transfer firm called Intermex. And she was told by her boss to keep her phone turned on at all times. I guess the boss has even come out and admitted that employees would be monitored while off duty and bragged that he knew how fast she was driving at specific points because she had the software installed on her phone. There was a crazy quote in the article. Quote, she likened the app to a prisoner's ankle bracelet and informed Stubitz, that was her boss, that his actions were illegal. Stubitz replied that she should tolerate the illegal intrusion because Intermex was paying her more than her previous employer was. Quote, her boss actually told her this. So there is an app out there. It is called, I believe it's pronounced Xora Street Smart, or maybe Zora Street Smart. And it is built to allow companies to monitor remote workers. So if you've got maybe field techs or people who work in remote locations, there are all kinds of tools in this app that will let your employer make sure that you are where you say you are and are supposed to be. And people are voluntarily putting these on their personal devices, and in theory, a unscripulous company could check in at any time and see where you are and what you're doing. And that's a little scary.
Well, and you know, here's the thing. Like, I get the idea of certain employers wanting to track locations to make sure that people are doing the things that they're really supposed to be doing.
Sure.
So I get that. Like, the whole basic concept of the application isn't really evil or bad. I mean, if you have a job and you're supposed to make 20 sales calls a day, and they want to know that you actually made those 20 sales calls, and you know, I get it. I mean, that's a good use of technology, right? But obviously, that right ends when you're not on duty. And especially, like, here's the thing. If the employer just hadn't been a douchebag and said, well, I knew you were speeding last weekend. Ha, ha, ha. You're an idiot. You know, why would you do that? I mean, if nothing else, this manager needs to be raked over the coals for being stupid. Because even if you are tracking that, don't admit it and don't try to, you know, make someone feel bad. And I mean, they're going to lose this lawsuit.
Oh, I mean, hope so.
She's suing them up one side and down the other, and she should win this. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. The only way that I could see that you could get away with tracking someone, quote unquote, 24/7,
365.
Is to, if you were providing the phone and the person were stupid enough not to turn the phone off.
Yeah.
Well, then it's the company's phone. But I don't think that was the case in this. I think
it was her phone.
It was her personal phone that they said, you know, we're going to require you to put this software on it. And yeah, that's bad. That's really bad. Right. You can't do that.
Well, and it's something definitely that everyone needs to be aware of, that you don't always know what applications are doing behind the scenes. And when you are using your personal equipment for things that are work related, you've got to remember that you are doing that as a convenience for yourself, but there could be potentially a price to pay. Now, you hope your employer is not going to be unscrupulous and is going to have, you know, some sort of privacy policy that will clearly upfront notify you that if you are installing applications that they recommend or that they have even written and provided themselves, that there is some component, if it is there, that, you know, monitors location and that is a capability. And clearly they should outline, you know, what the restrictions that they will impose upon themselves for accessing that data are. But at the end of the day, you've got to pay attention to what you're putting on your on your phones, and you've got to make sure that it's, you know, not going to be bad for you. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't make sense to use personal equipment for convenience. If your company needs you to do those things, they can provide the tools for you to do them. It always irritates me a little bit when those personal privacy lines get crossed, and, you know, it always tends to work out for the big companies because they have deeper pockets and more expensive lawyers and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, it is something to be aware of. And I will say, I think that Google and Android does do a much better job of notifying users to the level of granularity that applications are going to, permissions that they're going to seek, than Apple does. However, I will say that there have been applications I've installed and it's popped up the big screen of this application is going to be able to access this and do that and control the other and turn this on and turn that off and do the other. And you just click, oh yeah, okay, whatever. Just get it on there. I want to play my, you know, Words with Candy or whatever it is. And you just click right through it and don't really pay attention to it. And I think, you know, everybody's guilty of that, especially people who may not be as technically savvy. So, you know, if you aren't paying attention to the apps that you're installing and what they say they can do, it probably should start paying attention to those things. There have been plenty of instances of apps that have been, you know, sucking data off of people's phones, both in the Android and the iOS world, not so much in the Windows world, because I don't know that there are any apps over there, and sending them off, you know, far, far more data than an app would ever need. But, you know, people don't know it and the developers do it. So something to be aware of and to be careful about there, folks. You had some stories in here, Jeff, that kind of blew my mind, and I have purposely not looked them up so you can educate me more. Tell me about fish and that they're not all cold-blooded bastards.
Okay, so scientists recently discovered the first warm-blooded fish. It's called the opa or moonfish.
Opa!
Opa! That's right. And apparently it gets its body heat by drinking vast quantities of Greek alcohol. No, wait.
Setting cheese on fire and breaking a glass?
Yeah. Actually, that's not true at all. But it's called the opa fish or opa! Moonfish. Opa! And so basically, it generates its own body heat with very large pectoral muscles and then saves that heat.
You want to see me flex. Big old pecs,
baby. And it saves that in something that I'm much more familiar with than large pectoral muscles, that being a large layer of fat. As a fish, it is the only one that allows it. It is able to keep its core body temperature up, and that's important, actually, when you're a predator. And it allows it to be a significantly more vigorous predator than any other fish, huh, because it can dive and be a predator at a very deep depths and cold water. And that is not normal for most fish. Tuna and sharks can temporarily raise their body temperatures.
Interesting.
But they are not really able to feed at, you know, 200, 300 meters of depth. And that's why if you're like me and you like watching Wicked Tuna, those tuna do raise their body temperature, but they do it and then they're usually feeding at, you know, 50 feet of water, 25 feet of water. And this opa fish, by feeding at a much larger depth, has less competition, huh, for food chain.
Sure.
And so, you know, most fish that are attacking or, you know, feeding at those deep depths tend to be what they call ambush fish, you know, like angler fish.
They just kind of sit around and wait for something to swim by.
They kind of sit around and wait for something to come by. Sometimes they have something that makes, you know, attracts other fish to them, and then they do a, you know, a quick ambush. And this is actually, you know, because it's warm-blooded, it enables it to actually be a hunter at those depths, and it increases its eyesight and its endurance significantly. So kind of interesting. It's always, I think, somewhat interesting when you have the first of something, and it kind of surprised researchers a lot that there was such a fish existed. It's kind of a weird and yet pretty looking fish if you check the picture out of it.
Okay, so a fish that has some unique capability that allows it to hunt vigorously, it must be from Australia.
No, it's not poisonous.
Ah, but do you know the difference between poisonous and venomous?
I actually do.
Oh, okay.
Just between poison and venomous.
Just checking. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I just want to say, damn, nature, you scary. The last thing we need is warm-blooded MF'n fish swimming up around in here. I don't need a super predator that can come at me from 200 meters.
Okay, but you're never going to be at 200 meters, Jacob, so I think you're safe.
You don't know what I do. Sometimes I might deep saturation dive. So I do have
to, I'm pretty sure I do know what you do.
And it's not hanging around at 200 meters.
No.
I got to see if my diving watch really will stand up to what it says it will on the case.
Fair enough.
So I haven't
come up too quick.
Oh, yeah. Well, I do that liquid breathing stuff. And then I can just do whatever I want. No, so I actually have a question, and you might know the answer to this. You might not know the answer to this. So you said in the notes, and so down there, the temperatures are like 10 C, which that's pretty cold. What is it like? That's above freezing, 40-ish degrees, something like that. So obviously, oxygen saturation goes up as temperature goes down because you can force more oxygen into the water, which is why cold water fish tend to be bigger. So is this a big giant fish? Because it could benefit from the oxygen, and if it generates its own heat, are we talking like something that I should be scared of, or like just like a little thing that, oh yeah, just it eats some stuff and I don't have to worry about it?
So, you know, oddly enough, if you go, I put a link in our notes, and I'm sure we can put them in the show notes. It's not something that you need to be scared of per se. It's not that big, but it's not a small fish either. I would say it looks like it gets up to be about 50 or 60 pounds.
That's a big fish.
It's, you know, a foot. It's almost round. It's like a big circle fish.
Okay. Yeah, I see the picture here. It is very pretty, colorful.
It's very colorful and pretty.
I bet that tastes delicious.
I bet it does too, actually.
I'm going to eat you. Fish now.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, they can actually hunt in degrees down to like 4 degrees.
Wow. Which,
I mean, that's you know, the ocean
that's
doesn't
chilly.
Really get. Yeah, that's pretty chilly. So, you know, it was, I thought it was pretty interesting.
That's very neat. I mean, it is amazing all of the discoveries that, you know, we haven't made yet. I mean, for as much as we know about the cosmos, we really don't know a whole lot about what's right underneath us. So very cool. I am learning all kinds of stuff this episode. So Apple and Beats are starting to merge. I've heard a little bit about this. Tell me more.
Okay, well, and I kind of wanted to ask you parts of this because I'm interested to know. I have not taken the dive into any music service at this point. Now, with that being said, I get Amazon's music service just because I'm a Prime member.
Yeah.
And I have used that occasionally.
Their catalog's not as big. I think
their catalog is.
They've increased it, but it's only, I think, a couple of million tracks compared to.
Right.
Spotify has 25 or 30 million, and so does Google. Sure. And I think Beats does too. I think they all have about the same catalog.
So anyway, by all rumors, and these are all still rumors yet, I imagine we're going to hear something fairly definitive at WWDC. At least that would be my guess, which is coming up, you know, presently. But all the rumors are that it's going to be integrated into the music app, that it's not going to be a separate app, and that it's going to be a redesigned music app. And that's a welcome thing, in my opinion, from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I'm kind of excited about, I don't know if you are, I have a pretty extensive personal library, some of which, quite honestly, is stuff that I, even with the 2 to 4 million song catalogs that these places have, they're not going to have some of the stuff I have.
Okay.
I have some pretty weird taken off of record recordings of old jazz music.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not, because it's really good stuff. Okay, but anyway, that they're not going to have.
Right.
So one of the things that I'm excited about is that with this this cross integration and everything being in the music app is that the rumors are that it's going to allow cross play between your own personal library and the Beats catalog. So you can create a playlist that would include your own personal tracks as well as the current catalog, mm-hmm. which I think is very cool. But I guess my biggest question is for me, who hasn't pulled the trigger yet, and I honestly don't know if I will pull the trigger, it's not that I don't like listening to music. I really like listening to music. I have 32,000 tracks of music. And I'm not ever going to listen to all 32,000 tracks. I mean, listening to new music, I mean, there's appeal there, but it's just, it's so difficult to find good new stuff, at least for me. Not that I'm, you know, particular in any way. I like almost all kinds of music, but with that being said, I like the stuff that I like that I have now. Mm-hmm. And the majority of my listening at this point is podcasts. I mean, you know, obviously we do a podcast and we do that because we enjoy it, but I enjoy podcasts. So I listen to a lot of different podcasts. And interestingly enough, with some of the interviews and stuff that we've been doing, I'm listening to more podcasts because I'm finding new ones that I really enjoy, because we're talking to people that are doing wonderful things. And I just don't know how much music listening I have in my, you know, time frame. And I know, I believe, are you a Spotify?
Here's what I have to say about that. You need to seriously consider a streaming service and try it, because I think they all have demos. I think Spotify might be 30 days, or at the very least, it's a 30-day money back. And I know Google's All Access is 30 days free. I think Beats is 2 weeks or 21 days. I don't remember which. Here's what I have to say about that. So I signed up for Spotify. They had a thing. I got an email from them. It's been quite a while ago. That was 3 months for 99 cents. So how could you not sign up for that? So I signed up for it. And I really liked it. And what I found, and to your point, is yes, I don't think I have nearly as many tracks as you do. I'm 10 or 15,000. But one of the things that you can do is with a streaming service is if you ever have an itch, I haven't heard this song or this artist, then for whatever reason you want to hear, you know, Neil Diamond. You probably have all of Neil Diamond's stuff, but you want to hear Neil Diamond. Well, you could just go bloop, 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 and you've got his entire discography there, or, you know, anybody. Or you hear a song on the radio and you Shazam it. And you're like, hey, I kind of like that. Let's see what else they've got. You've got access to that catalog without having to invest anything to find out, do you like that artist or not? So that's the first thing I'm going to say. If you do enjoy experimenting and finding new music, it is phenomenal for that. I will say that I am not a Spotify customer. I put that subscription on hold and I switched over to try the Google All Access. And Google's music app, the Google Play app on iOS, does allow you, and on Android too, does allow you to intermix between tracks that you have locally, tracks that you have in Google's cloud storage, and tracks that are part of the Google All Access Music. And you can build playlists that, you know, intertwine and do all that stuff. On the phone itself, under iOS, and I'm assuming on Android too, I have used the Google Play app on Android, and it's very similar. So I can't speak to it because I'm an iOS person now and have been for over a year now. It works great. It's a fantastic app. And the nice thing is, and Google just unveiled this a month or two ago, maybe a year ago, they bought a company called, and the name's going to escape me, Songza. And one of the things that Songza had, which was really nice, is they had curated mood-based playlists. So you would go in and kind of like Beats has what they call the sentence with Songza. And now with Google, you go in and say, I am blank, and they've got 8 or 10 things in the app. I'm driving, I want to work out, I'm looking for an energy kick, I want to be mellow, I'm chilling with friends, I'm at a summer party, and you click that, and then it says I feel like, and then there's usually 3 or 4 categories, you know, like, you know, smooth 70s hits, or, you know, 80s one hit wonder, and so you drill in, and then it's a curated playlist. And here's the thing, some of the curated, I mean, they are really, really good. So it's great for that. And then, you know, for new music, it is phenomenal. If you just want to find out what's, you know, current in the pop world, and, you know, I know everybody's down on pop and there is some really bad pop out there. There's also some really good pop out there right now. I mean, by the definition of what it is, pop is catchy and gets into your head. And, you know, you find yourself singing stupid lyrics to Taylor Swift, but it's so catchy and she's adorable. And so, you know, you can find that stuff, which I don't normally listen to, but it's at the touch of my fingertips. I can see what the top 10 songs are in the US or the top 10 songs in Europe or whatever. And can kind of feel like I'm still a little bit with it and hip, even though I am not with it at all, nor hip. So it's great for that. Now, the one caveat I will say, and I don't know if this is a Google music app issue on iOS, or if this is a, my car is a 2012 and the Apple interface hasn't been updated in 3 years because car manufacturers don't do that issue. But while Spotify never had an issue interfacing with my car and I could change tracks and all of that good stuff, and it just worked seamlessly, the Google app has all kinds of problems. Sometimes it won't play at all. Sometimes it won't let me skip tracks. Sometimes it just dumps out of the Google Music app and goes back to playing music that is on the phone. I have no idea what the problem is there. How, so, you know, take it for what it will. I'm actually been thinking about canceling Google and giving Beats a try. And I know there's all kinds of rumors that Apple's going to integrate them. Potentially they're going to beat the, what is it, $9.95 per month price. I've heard $5. I've heard $7. So who knows what they're going to do. I know Google and Spotify are both $9.95, $9.99, something like that. But I highly recommend it. The latest rumor
actually is $9.95. So.
And it would shock me that they came in substantially under, because I've heard that Spotify is having some problems with the royalties and all of that. And there's grumblings that they don't make enough money for the music labels at $10 a month and yada, yada, yada. I'm a big advocate of streaming music. And when I do listen to music, and at this point, my music listening is probably 20% of my in the car entertainment. It is mostly podcasts, but you know, the other day I put it on, was listening to music. It's great for that. And, you know, it really does help, especially if there's genres of music that you like. Like, 3 years ago, I saw a band called Alabama Shakes on Saturday Night Live and went, man, I really like their sound. And so, I bought their album, and, you know, once I signed up for Spotify and all those, it's in my playlists. And, you know, from that, then I've been able to find other bands that I like that aren't exactly the same sound, but, you know, they're great. Like, you know, there's the Old Crow Medicine Show, there's the Civil Wars, there's the Yvette Brothers. And they're bands that I would have never found if I hadn't had some kind of a, hey, you might also like, if I just had bought this album and it was a playlist and I played, you know, the Alabama Shakes album over and over and over again. So I'm a big fan.
So one of the reasons I've been holding off is because the idea of having everything integrated into the Apple Music application, there are, you know, like, I want to be able to say, hey, Siri, I'm really in the mood for Neil Diamond. And even if I don't have Neil Diamond, and it, to be able to go out there and use that, you know, Beats Music Library, I mean, to me, that will be a big deal. And some of the things that that are rumored, I think, are actually kind of interesting. I think that they're trying to differentiate themselves a little bit by doing some exclusive deals with artists. We haven't heard any official news yet, but what they're talking about is that artists are going to have a social aspect that will allow them to do things like share their favorite playlists, post online or post exclusive concert footage for you know, shows that they've done that you will be able to access through the music app.
Yeah.
And you know, do things like, you know, if you like our sound, here are some other bands that, you know, we got our influence from, and stuff like that. And I kind of think that that adds something that I think I would be interested in. You know, I'm obviously hoping for less than $9.95. The latest rumors are that $9.95 is where it's going to come in, and that's probably not too much for me, even with as little music as I listen to. I like supporting artists. I think that when somebody's putting something out there that you enjoy, that you should give them money. And hopefully, you know, artists will see money from this service. That's a question of whether or not the music industry is really paying artists or not. I don't know the answer to that question. But you know, I'm kind of excited about it, but that's the reason I've held off, because quite honestly, like, I don't want to, you know, I kind of want to wait and give Apple that first glance. And then if it's okay, or if I enjoy it, then I'll stick with that. I think that at this point, you know, I love Android to death. I always have. I still think, and I do believe this, that from a pure functional software perspective, at this point, Android is a better product as a standalone product than Apple. With that being said, that does not, for me, and the decision that I've made is that software alone isn't the most important thing to me. And Apple has, and I believe, at least, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, always has and always will make the best hardware. And I am 100% all in. My MacBook, we have an iMac. We're a, you know, a Macintosh / Apple only house now, as far as computer hardware and the interoperability that that allows us by going iPhone. I think I'm in that. I think I'm back into that. I'm going to have an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it's going to be, because it does things that I really like, having that interoperability with my machine. And I know that Android will do that with other machines. I know all that stuff. But, you know, for me, I'm definitely a Mac guy. I'm going to stay a Mac guy. And therefore, I'm probably at this point going to stay an iPhone guy. So I kind of want to give Apple that benefit of the doubt. I'm interested to see what it's going to be. And I that's one of the things I'm actually looking forward to with WWDC. I think we'll hear some news finally.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Apple does the Siri integration and they bring that streaming library into a native app, that's going to be a huge thing, because, you know, you have 20 million songs at your fingertips through Spotify and through Google and through Beats. And if you're driving and you want to find something obscure, it's dangerous. I mean, it is like using your phone while you're texting and driving, and it's not a good idea. So, you know, you've either got to pre-think about what you might be interested in listening to and build playlists, or kind of stick with what you've got until you've got a long light, and then you can fiddle with your phone, which still really isn't a good idea. So if Apple can't, and when you use the, you know, the built-in app and Siri, it does work great. You know, hey, you know, play Bon Jovi, hey, play Van Halen. It just works. And if they can make that work with the Beats catalog and bring it along with it, that'll be, I think, a game changer. Because I don't know if Google's voice recognition plus the Google Play app on Android will do that. It probably will, because I do have to say, I will give Google the edge when it comes to the voice, if not recognition, not that Siri gets it wrong, but Google interprets it a lot better, in my opinion. And that is definitely my go-to. Even on an iPhone, when I've got a voice question, I always pull the Google app up way before I pull up Siri to ask questions. But yeah, that integration is going to be huge. And if they get that working, that's going to be a great thing. You know, and to your point about the cost, you know, the way I figured it is, about the time I signed up for Spotify, I would buy, you know, maybe I'd average a CD a month, and it would be, you know, I'd go 2 or 3 months without buying anything, and I'd buy 3 CDs. And you know, I figured I'm probably spending about the same amount of money per year. So that's how I justified it to myself. But I will say, I don't know if streaming actually puts the more money in the artist's pocket than buying CDs. And the best thing to do to support the bands that you like is buy their merchandise, because I think that gives them a lot more of a cut than any form of buying music.
That's true. So, okay, you know, I know this is a rabbit hole, but you just made me think of a question, because you apparently were in an 80s hair band kind of mood there when you mentioned Van Halen and Bon Jovi. But here's a question.
I was listening to 80s driving tunes.
So, yeah. So here's a question that has nothing to do with technology or anything that we're really talking about. But in your opinion, who is the more successful band, Bon Jovi or Van Halen?
Oh, okay. Wait, so I got to parameterize this a bit. So the more successful band, or individually more successful as an artist?
The more successful band, okay, which is the bigger band?
God,
is Van Halen the bigger band, or is Bon Jovi the bigger band?
Are you asking me, or do you know the answer and you're setting me up? Because
I don't know that there is an answer. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could look at that. Oh, well, who's sold the most records? Oh,
sure.
Who's done, you know? No, I'm just talking about your gut feeling. If someone held a gun to your head and said, okay, here's the two bands, which is the bigger band?
Okay, well, it's not fair, because in my opinion, 1984 may be one of the best rock albums that was ever put to vinyl, to tape, to CD. I got to give it to Van Halen, specifically with Diamond Dave. That is the thing. And I got to give it to Van Halen.
To quote some Sunday talk show that I don't ever watch, but I like making fun of. Incorrect. The correct answer is Bon Jovi.
He may have sold more albums. He may have toured. I don't know. But in my heart,
okay,
it's Eddie and Dave and the boys.
Okay. Here's why I pick Bon Jovi. Okay,
you can't say I'm incorrect if this is subjective.
It is subjective. And hey, look, if you said, pick who has the best album of the two, the reason I say Bon Jovi had a successful music career across probably four decades.
Okay.
They were a popular band in the 70s. They were a popular band in the 80s. They were a popular band in the 90s. And they were a popular band in the aughts.
But again, it is personal opinion, not anything else.
Although 1984 is darn good album, I hold Slippery When Wet.
That's a good album, too. There. That is a great album. I'm not as huge of a fan of the Sammy years. I will say this. So, gosh, years ago, and I don't even know how long ago it's been now, there was David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar were touring, and they were alternating. So on one night, Diamond Dave would open the show and Sammy would close it. And then the next night, Sammy would open the show and David Lee Roth would close it. And, they came here to Indy and had to go see him, and they were calling it the Sans Halen tour. And, so that particular night, it was David Lee Roth, his turn to come and open the show. And, he came out and the place was packed and people were screaming and going nuts. And he did his set and it was awesome. And so they did the intermission and Sammy comes out and he's like, I'm going to be out in 10 minutes. Woo! And like the place emptied out and nobody stayed for Sammy. It was so sad. I mean,
okay. So in fairness, I'm going to caveat that a little bit because I'm too more of a David Lee Roth fan than I am a Sammy Hagar fan. But in fairness, okay, let's point out that we are in the hometown of David Lee Roth.
Oh yeah.
So
we get some wanted dead or alive on the line here. Does that make you happy, Jeff?
You're ignoring my comment.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Indianapolis is David Lee Roth's hometown.
That is true.
So I think that is probably not a fair assessment because I'm pretty sure if you were in Boston and went to see that tour, there's probably going to be more Sammy Hagar fans than there are Diamond David Lee Roth.
Okay, there is some truth to that, but I got to give it to Van Halen, and I went and saw him 2 years ago when they reunited with David Lee Roth. And here's the thing: 50 some odd year old David Lee Roth doesn't quite have the high kick.
It's more of a moderate kick.
Yeah, doesn't quite have the baton twirling. And, bless his soul, he was out there and he was trying. And it kind of looked a little bit like that video Star Wars kid just kind of flailing around in his basement. But he still has the pipes, man. He can still hit those notes.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Well, okay, so the other reason I hold a warm place in my heart. I'm going to get serious now for a little bit. So the first time I met my wife, junior in high school, a summer camp that I went to
one time at summer camp?
So it was a summer camp for gifted and talented. It was a small business and entrepreneurship summer camp. Doesn't that sound exciting?
Were you also a member of the Young Republicans Club?
Okay, so, but I met her at this camp, and I can still remember, it wasn't like we weren't a thing, we were just in the same camp, but I can still remember at the hall, and we were, at a college dorm, and down in the lobby, and on the big TV was Bon Jovi's video for Lay Your Hands on Me, and we were both singing, and and then, fast forward 3 years, and we meet again in college, and we're like, oh my God, do you remember the summer camp? And so, Bon Jovi holds a warm place in my heart for the wife. So
we have just discovered the reason that you pick Bon Jovi, and not the clearly superior choice, which is Van Halen. But yeah, both great bands. I don't want to offend any of the
Can
Bon
we both
Jovi
agree that John Bon Jovi is way more dreamy than Diamond Dave?
oh, I don't know, like 1980s Diamond Dave when he was all like, I don't give a damn and cool and ripped he shirts wasn't and leather dreamy, pants.
He was a whore.
Okay, that's fair.
Sorry, but no.
He definitely looks like he doesn't bathe that often. But yeah, to be fair, so does Bon Jovi sometimes.
Well, yeah.
I think that's part of the look.
I was going to say, I think that's more of a look in Bon Jovi's case as opposed to a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, and leather pants don't do anybody any favors in the summer. I'm just saying it's probably like swamp ass down there.
Okay, I'm sorry. Rabbit hole, I know.
Way
sorry,
down
folks,
that rabbit
but,
hole.
But 80s music, you know, that's in the wheelhouse of love for Jacob and I. So, you know, turn up your favorite Van Halen song of your choice and follow it by a Bon Jovi classic and rock out.
We have been talking a long time. I don't know if we are going to do anybody any favors if we keep going. What do you say we start wrapping this up and tell us what you love this time, Jeff?
Okay, I want to throw one more topic in just because it's real quick because we really don't need to talk about it any further than. It's kind of a WTF question mark topic. I just wanted to throw out there, if you haven't seen it, go out and Google KFC tray keyboard. Because KFC in a marketing, and actually it's only in Germany right now, as a marketing campaign in Germany, they have released Bluetooth keyboards that are built into the tray on which you get your food so that as you're sitting and munching on your delicious, okay, not delicious, on your extremely greasy KFC food and you don't want to get that grease all over your phone, you can use the keyboard on the tray to work on your phone. And I just want to point out, okay, part of me thinks this is the totally fun, most coolest thing ever, but the reality of it is, do you really want to be putting your hands on one of those trays and then eating? Because, you know, people, first of all, let's face it, KFC is probably not like, you know, top lists of let's keep everything the cleanest that we possibly can type restaurants. And the person before you who was munching down on their yummy KFC.
Yeah.
This really isn't a good idea, but it was just one of those things where I was like, are you kidding me? And I had to put it in there. So do yourself a favor and go out and Google it and laugh because it's hilarious.
And when I first heard about it, I was not envisioning what it actually is. And it's like a membrane on the on the tray. So it's like you just take your tray and it's got a membrane on top of it. And that's disgusting. And I also hope that they put an ambulance button on there. So after you've eaten your KFC double down, you can just summon the ambulance to take you right to the hospital because
well,
you probably need
you
a bypass.
Be able to, you wouldn't be able to dial your phone from the tray. So that you can call for that ambulance.
Does the tray pre-dial 9-1 when you sit down? So you're just ready as soon as you cram, you know,
they have healthy choices at Kentucky Fried Chicken. I just want
what they have at KFC. They have these things called Chicken Littles. Have you ever had a Chicken Little?
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're just little bombs of fat and crispy chicken, and I love them to death. I love them so much. Yeah, no, yeah. You shouldn't ever eat at KFC.
I totally agree. I hope Long John Silver's makes a play for their Bluetooth keyboard soon.
Yeah, in my advancing age, I just can't even eat Long John Silver's anymore. Don't get me wrong, I love it, but I pay way too hefty of a price every time I go there. So it is
okay,
permanently
now,
off my list.
Let's wrap this up. Jacob, you tell me what you love.
Okay, so what I love, I found, so a couple of weeks ago, it may have even been longer ago than that now. My memory's not so good in my advanced stage. We had Carla and Tom Streeter on, and one of the things that Carla loved was an app called Breeze. And what Breeze did is it tracked you throughout the day as you walked, and it would analyze the data. I believe it was only iOS. It would analyze the data on your phone if you had a 5S or better that has the motion coprocessor that counts your steps and all of that good stuff. So it would know what you had been walking over the last 7 days. It would set a goal for you based on what your averages were per day. So if I normally am slightly more active on a Tuesday than, say, on a Monday, it would say, hey, you know, last Tuesday I saw that you walked 7,000 steps. So this Tuesday your goal is 7,800 steps. And if you get there and beat it, you get a shower of confetti, all that good stuff. So app seemed to be working great. I had it on my phone, and then I started having some problems. It was causing my battery to just drain like crazy. Removed it, reinstalled it, didn't fix the problem. I sent an email off to the developer saying, I'm having a problem. I don't know if this is an issue. What can you suggest that I do? And I get an auto reply back saying, we are no longer supporting Breeze, and as of May 1st, it will no longer be available to download from the App Store unless you have previously downloaded it. So sorry, we're focusing all of our efforts on Runkeeper. So, exactly. Sad trombone music. So I reluctantly uninstalled it because I really did like it. It was a clever little app. And I just recently found an app, again, iOS only, I believe. And it is called, let me look at my note here, Human, H-U-M-A-N. And it does what it does. It's a little different than Breeze. It motivates you to be active for 30 plus minutes a day. It counts walking, standing, biking, running, all of that stuff automatically. So far, knock on wood, it doesn't seem to be killing my phone and my battery. And what's really interesting and what's kind of neat and the way it works and it differentiates itself a little bit from Breeze is when you go into the app and look at your activity detail, you can scroll back through your whole day and it shows you when it thinks you're walking, when it thinks you're just being, quote, active, which can be standing, moving, things like that. It'll show if it thinks you're running. It shows when you're in the car, and it's pretty darn accurate. So, you know, the other day I was looking at it and I saw where I got out of bed, and it showed, you know, I was active for a few minutes and here and there and whatnot. And then it showed in the car, and it was pretty spot on for my car ride from my home to my office. And then it showed I was active as I walked into my desk. And then it showed, you know, I sat around for like an hour and 20 minutes and when I was first working and then was active. And it seems to be pretty accurate. It uses what we were talking about at the top of the show, that cell phone triangulation and Wi-Fi triangulation to figure out where you are and track you without draining your battery and all of those fun things. What's really cool is as a company, they allow you to get interstitial data. So you can go and download all of the data that it is tracking on you, and you can do your own massaging in various data manipulation tools. I think you get a CSV file and an XML file. It also plays nicely with Apple's Health app, so it can push into Health app your steps and activity and all of that fun stuff. The company also allows you to fully close and delete your account by sending a simple email, which is always nice because sometimes these companies make it incredibly difficult for you to get out of their slimy grasps, and you have no idea what they're doing with all of that delicious data that they have collected that we willingly give up for a shiny application, and I am guilty of that myself, but they seem like a pretty solid company. It's a nicely designed app. It looks very pretty. It's very Apple-esque. So there you go. I really enjoy it. It's free. It doesn't appear to have any paid stuff in it. I don't really know what their angle for monetization is. It's called Human. Go download it. Check it out. If nothing else, get yourself a little bit more active. That is what I am loving this week. How about you, Jeff?
I just want to add a couple notes on that. I've been using the Human app for about 7 months.
Oh, cool. Now.
And it is actually a very good app. I enjoy it. It does not drain your battery, and it does a great job. The only thing you have to be careful of is making sure that the app is, quote unquote, kind of open in the background.
Yeah.
By opening it up occasionally, or it'll, you know, kind of die out, and then it won't be tracking you. But it's a great app. I like it. Good choice.
Yes.
So what I love right now, kind of lame, but a fairly decent story. I love my parents.
Oh, lame. Oh. You loser. Yeah. Loving your parents who gave you life.
I know. So more importantly, I love the fact that my parents made a computer purchase choice. And I know early on in our podcasting days of yore, we talked about how much we hated when our families asked us for computer purchasing advice and then blatantly ignored every single thing we told them and did whatever they wanted instead. And guess what? My parents asked me, what do you think we should get as a computer? I gave them three choices. And gave them the pros and cons of each, and they actually listened and picked one.
Oh,
amazing, isn't it?
You need to go buy a lottery ticket right now. The stars are aligned.
So, and earlier in the episode, I talked about, hey, we'll talk more about the MacBook Pro 13-inch Retina with Force Touch later. Guess what they bought?
They bought a 15-inch, or they bought a 13?
No. No, they bought a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
All right.
So they're enjoying it so far. I've only gotten like three calls on questions. So they seem to be, kind of picking right up on it. Just for a little background, just because, I feel like people are going to ask this question if I don't say it. I gave them three choices. What I suggested for them, they were pretty set on that they wanted a portable device. They do winter in Florida every year in their retired years. And one of the things that they lament is not having their computer when they go to Florida. So they had pretty much decided that they wanted some kind of portable device that they could take with them. And so I gave them three options. I said, I'm going to give you a cheap option. I'm going to give you a kind of expensive option that is more of a, I don't know what you would call it, touch / tablet / laptop choice. And then I'm going to give you this you can't go wrong with, and it's probably the best PC out there, not necessarily the best choice for them. So my three options that I gave them, on the low end of price, I said, go get a Google Chromebook. Mm-hmm. And the Chromebook that I specifically was recommending for them is a Toshiba. It's currently out there. It's $329 is what it generally runs at most locations.
Now, the generally is a car.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. The keyboard's pretty good on it. The trackpad's the best of those that I have seen on Chromebooks, although I haven't seen the Pixel, but I don't really consider that a real choice, because if you're going to go Chromebook, spending $1,000 on a Chromebook seems a little weird to me. Pretty nice. It's a 1080p screen, around 13 inches. All in all, a pretty nice machine. Obviously, when you're making the choice for a Chromebook, the biggest reason I'm suggesting that for them is, for all intents and purposes, all they ever are doing is, browser-related type of activities, mm-hmm. and or activities that could be completed in a browser if they so chose. A big plus for me, and they have several times gotten viruses on their Windows desktop. I've had to clean that up several times, and obviously I'm going the Chromebook route. That makes that a lot more difficult to do and a lot easier to recover from if they did it. So that was kind of my low-end choice. The mid-range choice, I said, the big thing right now everybody's talking about is, convertible tablets. If you want to go that route and you're just dead set on sticking with Windows because that's what I recommended for them a Surface Pro 3. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily cheap. You're into about $1,200 by the time you get the tablet and the keyboard attachment and, the stylus and stuff like that. But it does offer some functionality that is quite good. There's some neat things you can do with the stylus. Obviously, the portability's there. You can use it more like a tablet. So that was kind of my, if you really, have seen things about tablets and kind of want to go that direction, that's the direction I would go. And then my final suggestion was at least a Mac product. I wasn't necessarily steering them towards the MacBook Pro with Retina. I was actually kind of thinking the 13-inch MacBook Air, mm-hmm. Would have been a good choice for them. But ultimately, they found it significantly easier to read on the 13-inch MacBook Pro, because I could pop up, I could change the graphics down, make the text extremely large, mm-hmm. With some of the accessibility things. And for them, that was a great choice and very crisp and clear and easier for them to read. They thought about the 15-inch. I wasn't dissuading them from that. I mean, obviously the 15-inch MacBook Pro is an excellent choice, but ultimately for them, they just felt like it was a little too unwieldy. My mom was a little concerned about sitting with that on her lap. She's not the,
okay,
sure. She's kind of a dainty, old woman thing. And so ultimately the 13-inch is what they chose. Now, that all being said, I'm so proud of them. They made that choice. They made a good choice. It's a great machine. My actual, when they said, well, what would you really, really get if you had to pick between the three? I actually said that the Chromebook would be right for them. And the reason I said that is, they don't really need a machine. They don't do photos. They don't do, you know, video editing. They don't do, you know, anything really. The big things that they use the computer for is the, you know, Facebook, email, Googling, you know, looking. My dad's a big car guy. That's where I got it from. So he likes, you know, looking on information on cars online and stuff like that.
Right.
They do their taxes on their computer, and they were very concerned about, well, we want to be able to have a real tax app with a real, you know, file. And I explained, well, you know, the same app that you use has an online, you know, version available that you could use.
Right.
And they were just a little uncomfortable with that. And ultimately, they wanted their free cell. Which obviously, you know, doesn't come free on a Mac. And I was trying to find choices in the App Store, and there were so many selections, none of which really had reviews, and most of which cost money. And so I was trying to look into it for them before I decided, you know, they were all, you know, $2 or $3. So not like it was going to break the bank, but I just wanted to, you know, kind of do some research and say, this is probably the one you should get. And I said, in the meantime, let me find one online for you. So I went and found, you know, a free cell type website that allows you to log in, and they love it. They're like, we don't want an app now. We love this. This is the best thing ever. And I was like, see, I told you, you only need a browser, but that's okay. Ultimately, you know, that will be the last computer they buy.
Yeah.
I am, you know, sure of it. You know, they're in their 70s and, you know, even if they, you know, push into the hundreds, I just don't know how much longer they'll be computer users. So I feel like this probably lasts them a good 7, 8, 9, 10 years even.
Sure.
And, you know, it's a nice machine, and I'm really proud of them. It's a great tool, and so far they actually seem to really be picking up on it rather easily. So that's
awesome.
Been, yeah, yeah.
Someone actually listening to advice.
What are the odds? Exactly.
Very cool.
So there you go.
Awesome.
So let's wrap this baby up and put a ribbon on it.
Take us home.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Or at least humans. You've just listened to another fine episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. If you would like to give us a comment, give us your thoughts, give us some suggestions on force trackpad applications that I'm too stupid to know about yet, give us a call, 317-643-1212. Send us an email at No Better Show. Feedback at nobettershow.com. You can tweet us at No Better Show. You can go to Facebook and post something there. We would love to hear from you. As always, if you enjoyed what we're doing and you want to help us out, it would go a long way to helping us out by going and rating us, reviewing us on iTunes. You know, give us the 5 stars. Tell people that we're the best thing that's ever happened in your life, or at least moderately not annoying enough that you hate us.
That we're the smartest guys you know.
That's right. If you know 2 people and those 2 people are us, we are definitely the smartest 2 people you know. So, you know, we really appreciate every we've been getting a lot of positive feedback, meeting a lot of new and interesting and nice people, and we love that, and that's what keeps us wanting to do this, really enjoying it, and we do love hearing from you. Thank you very much, and until next time, thanks for listening, and now you should know better too, even if it is only about nun urine.
And I just have to leave on this note right here. Oh yeah. The best synthesizer riff in the world. Have a great week, everybody.
Nothing gets me down.
There you go, Jeff. We'll do the karaoke version of this show next week.
Nah, no one's going to listen next week.
Have a great week, everybody.
Have a good one, guys.
She said ? To choose life, and then I sent her the link to the George Michael Wake Me Up, or Wham's Wake Me Up Before You Go. And then she sent back LOL. And now I'm listening to George Michael and singing.
Why wouldn't you be, really?
Quite honestly, it's kind of fun to crank up the music and sing with the microphone. Makes me feel all professional.
Yeah, you obviously don't hate the way you sound.
Yeah, gotta have faith, 'cause I gotta have faith, the faith, the faith. I gotta have faith, 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 baby.
I think we just found the ending of the podcast this week.